This episode of The Apartment Guys is being brought to you by Greenlight Equity Group. Greenlight Equity Group acquires and operates cash-flowing multifamily assets in progressive metropolitan markets such as Salt Lake City, Idaho, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and Columbus, Ohio. Greenlight ensures consistent, solid returns for its investors and a healthy environment for residents by operating high-quality, safe, clean, affordable apartment communities. To learn more about Greenlight and to sign up for the investor list, go to www.greenlightequitygroup.com.
Welcome to The Apartment Guys, where we dive deep into all things multifamily investing. Our mission is to educate, inspire, and empower real estate investors to reach their highest potential. Each week, host Tate Seymour interviews high-level guests from all over the industry who are sure to bring valuable, actionable ideas that will propel your career to the next level. Whether you're just starting out or a seasoned investor, you are in the right place. And now your host, the apartment guy, Tate Seymour.
Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of the Apartment Guys podcast. With us today is Mr. Kyle Mitchell. Kyle is a real estate entrepreneur with a focus in multifamily syndication. Currently, he has $17 million assets under management. He's the managing partner and co-founder of the APT Capital Group and the Asset Management Summit, which has an event coming up here in the spring that we're going to be talking about. The mission there is to positively impact the lives of their investors and communities in which they invest and the highest level of transparency and fiduciary responsibility, I would assume, to your investors is what you're getting to there. And Kyle is also the host of the weekly real estate podcast, Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate, where he speaks with various experts in the real estate industry to help educate and create clarity for passive investors, which is such a high value thing to offer to the passive investor community. With a background in operations, management, and logistics, he has overseen multi-million dollar businesses and has a passion for doing the same in the multifamily syndication space. So Kyle, thanks for joining us on The Apartment Guys. We appreciate it. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tate. I'm excited to be here and talk to you.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. So before we kind of dive into the nuts and bolts and the high value ad component of the episode, just give us a little feel for who Kyle Mitchell is and kind of where you're from. I know you're in Southern California, but you know where you're from, where you are right now, and maybe you know something you do for fun. Love to know a little bit about you in that regard before we get started.
Yeah, sure. Born and raised in Southern California, still live here basically on the border of LA and Orange County. And something I like to do for fun is play golf with my wife. That's actually what I did in my previous life and career. I was a general manager and a regional director for a golf management company. And I've been playing golf since I was a kid and just naturally grew into it. Ended up getting a management role early on when I was 21 and did that for 16 years. And that's really where I learned, you know, how to operate businesses, how to manage people, how to implement systems and things like that. And, you know, really taught me to be able to apply those, the same things that I do today in apartment investing. So really grateful for that career. And, you know, now I'm in apartment investing for the last 3 years full time and transitioned as soon as I found multifamily.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I just got done with a golf weekend in Pinehurst with my dad and my brother this last weekend. And I was thinking that you must have some really applicable values and skill sets that come from both playing the game of golf and managing, I would think, real high level golf operations. There's got to be such an attention to detail in both of those roles. And, you know, attention to precision and metrics that I would think would lend very well to your multifamily career.
You know what? You're the first person to ever say that. And I completely agree. But, you know, a lot of people actually say, how does you having a, you know, a background in the golf management space actually apply to real estate? And it absolutely does. You know, essentially what you're doing when you're buying real estate is you're managing a property, you're managing a business, a multi-million dollar business. And a lot of people have a lot of focus on the fun part of it, which they see is buying millions and millions of dollars of real estate, raising millions and millions of dollars. But really when it gets down to it, the nuts and bolts and where you make your money is on the operation side of it. After you purchase a property, it's about implementing your business plan and executing efficiently. And that's what I did as a professional golfer and as a regional director for a golf course and a golf company.
Yeah, that's fantastic. There's so many great lessons from the game of golf. I mean, so many of our sports teach us so much, but I think golf in particular, it's such a mental game, and there's so much emotional intelligence that's required amongst other things to be successful. And I think that's true in entrepreneurship amongst other places in business as well. So
completely agree.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, well, great. So tell us a little bit about the APT Capital Group. You're based in Southern California, I'm assuming.
We are. And this is a company that my business partner, Gary Lipsky, and I just started earlier this year in April. The background on that is Gary and I have worked together for several years on all of our deals. But when we first met, you know, we were just in that dating phase. And so our first two deals we did together under our separate companies. At that time, it was Limitless Estates and Break a Day Capital. And the reason why we did that was we wanted to make sure it made sense to merge companies before doing so. You know, once you merge, you're kind of married to that person and you're committed and you're going to hopefully continue to grow over the course of 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But you want to make sure you understand what your values and work ethics and all those things, you need to have them aligned. So that's what Gary and I did is first we got to know one another, made sure it made sense. And then we formed APT Capital Group as a combination of our companies back earlier this year. But we are based out of Southern California. However, we invest only in the Arizona markets as it sits today. We focus on Phoenix and Tucson. And the reason why we only focus in one state, essentially, you know, two markets, is because number one, we're very relationship driven with everything we do from an investor standpoint, but also just everything in business. And we want to have strong relationships in the markets that we invest. It's very difficult, in my opinion, to build five different strong relationships in five different markets, you know, over a short course of time. So we really focus on Arizona so that we can have the strongest relationships with the contractors in that market, with the brokers, with the investors, with the property management company. And so you're not hiring people out of necessity because you chased a deal into a new market. And yes, it's a great market, but I don't know anyone there yet. So now you're hiring out of necessity, which is just not the right way to go about it. So we spend a lot of time up front building relationships so that we can eliminate those types of risks, in my opinion. And so we own in both Phoenix and Tucson. We look for value add investments in the B2C class space.
Yeah, that's awesome. Real quick background into Tucson and Phoenix. How did you end up there?
Yeah, so kind of a longer story, but I'm happy to share it. You know, originally we were looking in Columbus, Ohio and Detroit, Michigan. And the way I got there was I plugged these markets into a spreadsheet, about 20 of them. And what we wanted at that time was just cash flow. And I wasn't looking at all the right metrics at that point in time. Yes, there was population growth and good things going on with Columbus, Ohio and Detroit. You know, I mean, I guess it depends on, you know, compared to what is something I always say. And so I'm glad we end up not investing there after several trips out there. It just didn't work out. And, you know, one of the things that was wearing on me when I first started my multifamily investing, I still had my full-time job. So I would take a day off during the middle of the week and fly to these markets and try and get back as soon as possible. And that's very difficult to do when you're changing time zones and having to fly 5 hours. And so we started looking at something that was a little bit closer, but also using a little bit different metrics and finding our market. We wanted a mix of cash flow and appreciation in a landlord friendly state. I mean, that's basically what we do in Arizona. And so population growth, rent growth, in-net migration, job diversity, job and wage growth, all those things were something that Arizona offered in both markets. And originally we were only looking in Phoenix, but I love Phoenix because I can be there in an hour in a flight. There's no time change half of the year. And I can literally, you know, pre-COVID, now the flights are a little bit more difficult, but I can be there at 7 a.m. and I could take a flight back at 9 p.m. and I can literally have 12, 13 hours to do work in that market and then get back the same day. And if I had to drive there because of the pandemic or whatever it is, I'm there in 5 hours. So we really like that. And proximity is not a top factor in selecting a market, but it should be one of the factors, because what we do is we do syndications and these business plans last for 3 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. And you've got to think about it. If I'm in California and I'm investing in Florida, which is a great market, right? I'm going to be flying out there quite often and flying 5 or 6 hours with the time change multiple times. Again, we're relationship based. So we're out in our market once, twice, sometimes 3 times a month. Would I be able to sustain that over 3 to 7 years? I don't think so. I'd get very tired of it, which then would, you know, essentially hurt my investors because I'm losing focus on my investment. And that's what something that I really didn't want. And so, you know, 3-5 years down the line, can I still take an hour flight to Arizona? Absolutely. I may move to Arizona here coming up pretty soon. And I can also drive there in 5 hours. So that was one of the determining factors, but also it was a great market. So originally we were looking in Phoenix and really wanted to focus on Phoenix. Unfortunately, what we were looking for at that time, the size, the type of product, and the level of competition, it was a little bit out of our reach when we first got started. And so a lot of the brokers told me, hey, take a look at Tucson. And I was like, Tucson's a smaller market. I'm not really sure. But my wife and I took a trip out there, absolutely fell in love with it, met with some brokers, met with property management companies, really liked it, did more research on the market. You know, it is, the MSA is over 1 million people. So a lot of people think that Tucson's extremely small. It's really not. Still a smaller market compared to others like Phoenix, but not that small of a market. And jobs and tech jobs are starting to come in there, and you know, they've got a good basis. So we really liked it, and our price per pound goes further there. There's less inventory in that market. However, there's actual more true value add. So we started looking there too, and that's actually where we got our first property. Our second property we got in Phoenix.
Okay. So you started. Okay. That's fantastic. I feel like there's like a reason why we're having this conversation right now. And in that there's a lot of very applicable takeaways already for me personally here, in that we're in Utah, we're based in Utah, and we have projects going here, but we are actively working in other markets on our relationship building in particular. And Columbus, Ohio happens to be one of the two cities that we really have a focus on. Oklahoma City is the other one. And I am really getting some good takeaways in terms of like logistical practicality with doing projects in different markets, maybe sticking to one, maximum two markets outside of your home market, right? So that you can best serve ultimately your investors and your residents by doing such a great job with your asset management, because you're on top of it, you're there, you're present as much as possible. That makes a lot of sense to me for sure. You talk to a lot of investors who maybe have their, you know, they have their hands in 3, 4, or 5 different markets in Texas or Florida or whatever. And I like your philosophy, Kyle, as far as best being able to serve your key people by sticking to one or two markets at the most. So,
yeah. And I think it depends on what you do as an investor. You know, if you're typically raising capital and having some other, you know, a few other job duties, but that's a little bit different than being a lead sponsor. I think if you're a lead sponsor, it's important, because underwriting from market to market, even from Phoenix to Tucson, is different, you know, but especially if we invest in Arizona and then go invest in Texas and then go and invest in Florida. If you're using the same underwriting metrics as you are in Texas or in Arizona that you are in Florida or Texas, you're going to be in trouble. You know, big determining factors like insurance, those are much different from market to market. Things like property tax. In Arizona, property tax is increased 5% on a max year over year, and only on ground up construction does it kind of reset based on the value. So it does not reset based on your purchase price. Whereas in like a Columbus, Ohio, or a Texas or Florida, they could double or even triple upon purchase and then year over year. So there's things that you need to know intimately about each market in order to go in there and confidently compete. Because right now, that there's a lot of competition, and you've got to put your best foot forward when you're making these offers. So there's less margin for error right now than I would say there was 4 or 5 years ago. And if you're just jumping into certain new markets and you don't understand that, one mistake on your underwriting could, you know, seemingly make something look like a good deal into a very bad deal. So those are among the many reasons why we like to focus in one. It doesn't mean we won't expand our markets in the future, but that's once we feel like we have a stronghold in the Arizona markets, where we'll likely add another one, but only one until we get to know that and get a stronghold in that market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, you know, another thought I had as you were talking there is the amount of credibility that you now currently have in your market with your key people, your brokers, your property managers, your investors, all the title folks, your lenders, et cetera. You have now expertise in the market and therefore credibility in the market. And that's going to make life easier for you as far as getting offers accepted and really, you know, turning up the volume on your portfolio inside of that market. So it just makes all kinds of sense, Kyle. I like it, man. So you guys really put a lot of intention and focus on asset management. You've said it best. You're buying a business. I've said you know you're buying a business in a box, but that almost cheapens it. You're buying a multi-million dollar business in most cases that, you know, deserves the best of business plans and the best of execution. And, you know, and that's what we're all underwriting, right? So the execution on the business plan is where the rubber meets the road. And you do such a good job of educating and helping other people through your summit and through podcasts, through your own podcast and others, really sharpen their saw and their skills around asset management. Wondering, Kyle, if you kind of speak to, you know, kind of maybe somebody that's just gotten their first asset, you know, they've closed, let's say it's, you know, 80 units or so. So, you know, they've got in-house management, et cetera, or let's say 100 units just to make, say, round figure. Where do you start? I mean, I know that the selection of the property manager is so, so key, and their systems and processes will largely or will heavily influence yours. But, you know, where do you start really digging in to getting that business plan going and humming along efficiently?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. It starts with selecting the property management company, which should be well before you've purchased that first property. We spent 6 months vetting property management companies, and maybe that was too long, maybe it wasn't, but we wanted to meet them face to face. We wanted to have lunch with them. We wanted to tour properties to get their feedback and understand how they communicated and what they saw and how well they knew the market. That was extremely important to us because you rely so heavily on your property management company, especially when they're projecting rents. I mean, you do all your due diligence too, but they live in that market. They understand it. They've got other properties around. And so you're really going to have to put some trust in the property management company. And so it starts with selecting the right property management company that has the systems and infrastructure that you want. If this is a mom and pop property management company that doesn't have any systems or software, and you get an Excel spreadsheet that's kind of put together on a weekly basis, and you want to see KPIs and a weekly report and all sorts of different things, then you're choosing the wrong property management company. So it all starts with that. And then the other thing I'll say about asset management is I think in the last 5 to 7 years, people have been spoiled with the market appreciating to where asset management was not paid attention to. Essentially, it was, here's my business plan, Mr. or Mrs. Property Manager, please execute it. And that's it. And, you know, raising rents was very easy over the last 5 years if you were in the right markets. And so, you know, revenue cures all evil is what I say, or income cures all. And so when your incomes are super high, it's easy to take your, you know, your foot off the gas and kind of not pay attention to it because it's kind of on cruise control.
Yeah.
But now with the downturn happening and all this stuff, if you were one of those people that put it on cruise control the last 5 years, now you're kind of scrambling to put systems in place that should have been implemented 5 years ago. So, you know, asset management is about being proactive, not reactive. And you can't always assume things are going to go perfectly. In fact, you should always assume what is the next thing to go wrong so you can be proactive and kind of put systems in place to identify those things early and solve them early. And so, you know, those days of handing the property management company the keys and that's it are over, and you really shouldn't really think of it that way. If that is your business plan, then there are holes in it immediately. You cannot trust a property management company to execute your business plan. You need to execute on it. And I'll give a great example here. If a property management company is charging you 3% of income, if you were to generate your property $100,000 of additional income on top of what you planned in 1 month, would that be a big deal, Tate?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay. The property management company makes $3,000 in that situation. So it's not a huge number for them, right? Yeah. So there's no one that is going to care as much as you care about your property. $100,000 to our property, for our investors, for us in 1 month, is huge. But to a property management company, if you're going to ask them to do something and go above and beyond, it's going to make them $3,000. It's almost not worth it, right? So selecting the right partner, but also making sure you're holding them accountable and implementing the systems to hold them accountable is so key, because they're not going to execute your business plan to the highest level unless someone is there to hold them accountable.
Okay, so that's perfect. So systems of accountability, let's just go right into that. So how do you set that up? I'm sure it's like right out of the gate with the property manager, you're setting the expectation and the systems in place. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have our weekly calls and we have our business plan in place. We will, let's just say we're closing on a property in 2 months. We will fly out there and sit down with the property management company who has an in-house general contractor and in-house rehab team and start talking about, hey, on day one, what is this going to look like? Are there any things that we can get started now? So that day one starts with a bang instead of, hey, it's, you know, holiday season, let's wait a couple weeks and then we'll apply for the permits then, and then we'll do this. And then now all of a sudden you're 90 days into your business plan, you're just starting, right? Mm-hmm. So it all starts on the front end. And again, I said it, be proactive, not reactive. So we're implementing these systems prior to closing. And, you know, we have a certain type of report that we want to see on a monthly or on a weekly basis on our weekly calls. And we'll go over each of those items. And really it's not about going over each one in detail. It's identifying where there may be a red flag or a dip. So, you know, our property management company uses a software called Yardi, and we integrate that with RealPage to provide us with our KPIs. And so all those numbers flow into our KPIs with RealPage, and then we're able to track all sorts of different KPIs. I mean, 100 different KPIs if we wanted to. So we can start to identify trends, and that's where you can get ahead of things and make decisions based on real information versus what your property management company is telling you, because most property management companies are not that efficient. They're a little archaic and they're just not as educated on your numbers as you would like them to be. So what they may think is, oh, rents are down because there's less traffic because I don't know, there's rain or something like that. Right. Well, our KPIs can tell us whether that's true or not. And maybe it's actually because they're not answering the phone or getting back to our clients efficiently, or they're not communicating with them quickly or properly. So there's all those different things where, you know, asset management and evaluating KPIs is about being able to educate yourself to make an educated decision versus hearsay, which in management, when you're dealing with people, that's one of the biggest mistakes, is they'll just believe what they hear and take that to heart. And we want to use data, just like Neil Bawa and Anna Myers talk about, right? I'm real big fans of them, and I look up to them on how they teach this, because you need to take emotion out of it. Mm-hmm. And the way you do that is by using data to make those educated decisions. There's no emotion in data. You know, those numbers are what they are. You just have to make sure that the numbers that you're looking at are being input correctly and translating properly. Yeah. So, you know, that's another key point for us.
Yeah. Okay. So really getting into the accountability, like holding the property manager accountable to the business plan and to your KPIs. You have a weekly meeting. That's obviously very frequent. So you guys are really on top of your metrics, you know, on a week to week basis. Is that kind of in and of itself enough to just having both sets of eyes on the data and on the metrics? Is that enough for them to be held accountable, or are you putting any like incentive in place for them, or where does the rubber meet the road in terms of like the accountability, I guess?
Yeah, it's not enough. And, you know, there's a fine line between micromanagement and holding someone accountable. They really are a line to toe. And, you know, we're not perfect for sure. There is times where maybe we over micromanage. But I think the thing to note is that the property management company is your partner. And when you're selecting them, you need to make sure up front they understand what your expectations are and you understand what their process and expectations are, so you can work together in tandem to execute your business plan. If you guys are fighting with each other the whole way, it's not going to work. You know, you've got to be a partnership, and partnerships still should hold each other accountable, but you have to be on the same page of how that's done, why it's being done. And ultimately, the reason why it's being done is because we want our property to succeed. We want to preserve our investors' capital. We want to grow our investors' capital. And at the same time, as that process continues to grow and as a property becomes better and better, then the property management company essentially makes more money as well, right? So it's a win-win on that situation versus, hey, you're my property management company, do what I say. That's just not going to go over well. So, you know, that's kind of something I learned in my years and years of management is you're nurturing and fostering a relationship there. And that's how it's got to be done. As far as incentives and things like that, yes, we definitely do incentives for our property management company, and they will change depending on the needs of the property and where we are, you know, whether it's getting more turns done quickly when we're trying to stabilize a property, or lease ups, the number of lease ups that we're getting, or, you know, once we're stabilized, maintaining an occupancy at a certain level with a rent per square foot gauge. So we're always changing and measuring those things. But, you know, holding a property management company accountable is, in my eyes, helping them improve their systems that are, you know, not where they should be. And essentially, if you can get them to buy into that, you're making them a better property management company at the same time. So another thing we do to hold our properties accountable is on a monthly basis, we audit them on email and phone call. And so every month I create a new email through Gmail, and I email them on a different platform every month, and I track it. And we've got a scoring sheet, and there's 80 points available, and you get a percentage score, and we want to see that percentage above an 80% and continuing to climb and get better. And, you know, those things have to do with how quickly did you respond to us? Was it professional? Was there a phone call and an email and a text, or was it just a phone call, or was it just an email? Are they using the template that we've provided them, which is a professional looking template with links and different things to add value to a customer or a potential resident before they even step foot on our property? Or is it, hey, thanks for your inquiry, please call us back to schedule an appointment? And we also ask one or two questions in each of those inquiries to see if they're actually responding to me or just copying and pasting, you know, so different things like that. And in helping them improve the process of how we reach out to clients or potential residents, it's going to help them because they're going to be able to book more, they're going to be able to convert more leases. And that's the ultimate goal. So just, you know, being able to have them buy into that process is the toughest part.
Yeah. And that's good. That's really getting in there. Like you said, on the partnership level, you're nurturing this partnership with them. It's got to be a win-win. You got to be in the same boat, paddling the same direction. And at the same time, that audit is, that's really powerful. You're giving me a really long to-do list here today, Kyle, but this is good stuff. We'll definitely be auditing our properties more frequently than we are right now. That's great stuff. So hopefully everybody's taking notes on that, both auditing with a phone call and an email to your property management, kind of doing the secret shopper thing, if you will, right?
Yep. That's what we call it too. Secret shopper.
Yeah. So let's talk KPIs for a second. What are your main KPIs and trends that you're tracking, the most important ones to you?
Yeah. I mean, right now with collections, with COVID going on, it's collections. I mean, every day I'm in Yardi looking at the collections month over month, you know, year over year and all that kind of stuff to see how we're trending up or down and why, and communicating with our property management company on why, how, and what we can do to improve those. That's a huge one right now. And then traffic is another one that we look at. You know, Neil Bawa talks about his LASL system. We utilize that system. So asset management is about identifying bottlenecks. And so when you break things down and have a system, it's easier to identify bottlenecks so you're not just guessing. I mean, I always say, let's just say you had 100 leads last week and you converted to one lease and that's all you knew. Mm-hmm. Well, you know that you're not converting enough, right? There's just not enough leases, but why? You have no idea where to start in that situation. You have no clue what the issue is. You don't know if those are bad leads. when you need to generate better leads. You don't know if the phone's broken and no one's answering the phone calls. You don't know that once they get on the property, there's crime and there's other things that those residents are not open to. You don't know if your rents are too high. So you're just guessing now at where to identify. But when you break it down, okay, so we had 100 leads, and out of those leads, we had 50 appointments, right? And out of those appointments, we had 25 showings. And of those showings, we had 10 applications. And then of those 10 applications, we had 2 leases. Now you can say, okay, where is the ratio off? Now you can say, okay, from L to A, we need to get more appointments from the leads, or maybe we need more leases from the applications, all those things. So now you can identify where the issue is and ask questions about that. And, right. You know, asset management is a lot about being able to ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. And the way you ask the right questions is having these systems in place to identify them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are major ones that we're working on right now from a KPI standpoint, but we look at, you know, the number of leases that we're bringing in on a weekly basis. You know, we've got a certain target number for each property. We want to also track our price per square foot to make sure it's trending up. Our trade in, trade out, meaning when someone renews, you know, what's the difference in the renewal amount? Or if someone moves out and a new person moves in, that'd be a trade out. Is mm-hmm. our dollar amount and dollar per square foot going up in that percentage? Because you don't want to bring a new person in at a lower rate. Right now with COVID, there's all sorts of different things that you need to pay attention to, because you don't want your occupancy to drop either. But, you know, in a normal environment, what you want to see is that growth. And so how much is that growth happening on a month over month, year over year basis?
Mm-hmm. So collections is big right now, keeping your rent per square foot on the upward trend. That's another biggie right now. Anything else that's
traffic is also number traffic, one. I mean, it's because right now we're really focused going into the holiday season on occupancy. You know, typically November, December, January are slower lease up months. Mm-hmm. And with the eviction moratorium going on right now, you know, who knows what's going to happen. So I anticipate them even being slower this year than it is in typical years. And so mm-hmm. really just maintaining that occupancy. And the way you do that is by having traffic and getting renewals. So making sure that, you know, we're renewing everyone that we can renew, although you have to be careful right now because you don't want to renew someone that's not paying rent if they're taking advantage of the whole eviction moratorium. But traffic's going to be huge. Where is the traffic coming from? Where are we converting the most traffic? And then kind of doubling down on those sources so that we can get more traffic in there to convert leads.
Mm-hmm. Let me just, I just kind of, this whole conversation, I just keep wondering, like, you have very specific expectations and requirements of your partners and your property managers, and you spent so much time vetting. We're very careful, meticulous about that. Are you happy with the results right now? Candidly, are things going as well as you'd like them to be going?
Yeah. So no property management company is perfect. You know, you're dealing with the human element, you know, you're dealing with people. And so there's nothing that's going to be perfect. And even if you select the right property management company, let's just say you and I are managing certain regions, one of us is going to be better than the other. That's just it, right? That's just how it happens. We're not all robots. You may be better at hiring. I may be better at driving revenue. Who knows? So not every property manager is going to be created equal. Not every regional is going to be created equal. We're extremely happy with our company. And we just had lunch with the owner last week, you know, sat down and talked to him about some of our growth plans and what our plans are in the future and where they're going to be and what we're looking for. And we're extremely happy with the flexibility that they provided with us and the transparency and the ability to be able to speak one-on-one, you know, with the owner face-to-face when they own 21,000 units in our market. They're not a small company. You know, they've got a whole department for general contractor department, rehab department, marketing, payroll, accounting. I mean, they're full blown. So we're happy with them, but that doesn't mean that we don't want them to improve in certain areas. So, you know, that's what one of those conversations was, is we'd like to see some improvement in certain areas. And I think, you know, a lot of the area where property management companies in general need to get better is implementing with technology and KPIs and tracking and things like that, and getting their staff to be able to utilize data to help them with their day to day. And, you know, analyzing data is not always fun, depending on the type of personality you are, and being able to figure out how to use that data to, you know, make the right decisions is difficult sometimes. And so it's something that we want to see more of, is technology being used in our decision making and in our ability to grow. So, you know, I would say that our properties have performed above expectations, even through COVID. Doesn't mean we haven't seen bumps in the road. You know, our Phoenix property, we were in the middle of, we'd only owned it 4 months, and we're in the middle of stabilization. Typically, it's going to take us 18 to 24 months. So has COVID put us behind? Absolutely. You know, we're several months behind there. We did take a pause on our renovations. We can't evict certain people that we were planning on getting out there and turning over the resident base that we're stuck with now until the eviction moratorium. But, you know, we're still cash flow positive, and we are seeing rents per square foot and rent on average continue to grow. And so we're happy with that. Again, it's a partnership, and you're working with your property management company to battle these things. No property management company has ever been through a COVID before, right? So what you want right. in that situation is a property management company that's going to be willing to talk with you, discuss options, pivot, and adjust on the fly to do everything possible to continue to drive your property. And that is certainly what we've gotten.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like you have a real high level of expectation, a high level of standards, but you also have a level of understanding and, I guess, even compassion for the situation right now that we're all in with something so unprecedented, such a, you know, an unprecedented event. And property management is, they're like the front lines, right? In this, when it comes to you and your asset, they're the ones dealing with the tenants directly. And they're the ones that are dealing with the pandemic directly. Your tenants are, and the economic consequences and unemployment and job loss and all of that. So one of the things that we look for in our property managers is a sense of, like, for lack of a better way of putting it, like kind of a sense of humanity, if you will, like a sense of, like, the first and foremost, these tenants are people, and just like we are, and they deserve, you know, all the respect that anybody else deserves, and to be treated well. And so we're very happy with our Utah property manager in that regard. They have a way of really keeping things on the very positive trajectory with our tenant base, and we're happy with that. But let me real quick just bounce back to something you had mentioned, that your property management uses Yardi software for the tracking and whatnot, and then you mentioned that you integrate that with your own software, and I didn't catch the name of that.
It's actually RealPage. So it's not our own software, RealPage. Okay. Yeah. They also have their own property management software. I think it's called OneSite. But yeah, RealPage enables us to integrate with Yardi and then take the data from Yardi and put them into KPI format. And once you're set up, it's actually pretty cheap. It's $1 a unit a month is what we pay. So, you know, for 128 units, $120 a month, and you get to see these KPIs. So it does take a while for them to set it up and get everything integrated. But once you're set up once, you know, your accounts are all formatted the same way from property to property. So then you can just keep adding properties. And so, but okay. To go back onto your point of you having that human side of things. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, essentially as a manager at a golf course, I worked for a property management company, but the asset class was for golf courses. Right. And so I understand the property management side of it, and it's a thankless position. The margins are tight, and you are the front line. And so it's a very difficult business to be in. Yeah. And if you push too much, it's going to break. And so there is that balance. And you do have to understand that you're servicing a resident, in our case now with apartments. And, you know, when we say we do value add investing, we're not just adding value to the property by increasing the NOI and jacking up the rents. I mean, we want to definitely have a human element to it, where we're helping our residents as well improve their lives, whether it's from a safety standpoint or from an education standpoint or just a sense of community standpoint, right? We want them to feel like this is their home, not their, you know, place that they just sleep at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. We have a very similar set of values here, where our residents and our investors are our number one. We're here to serve both of those groups in our business. And I think, you know, it's almost cliche these days, but you hear it a lot. But if you're coming from a place of service and a place of giving and a place of adding value to other people, it's almost like the currency these days, right? Like the adding a value to other people's lives. And you know, that's where you create abundance for yourself and for your family and for those around you as well, by creating maximum value in the world.
Agreed. Yeah. It's all about that. And you know, the more value you bring, the better. I think a lot of people kind of miss the boat when they talk about adding value. You know, I think just you should add as much value back to people as possible. All we do when we talk about how we're going to grow our company is, where are we going to add value next? You know, and by adding value, you expand your reach and your network, and you become a better person and an investor because of it. So that is our one, you know, core main belief, is always adding value back to people.
Yeah. So speaking of what's coming next for you guys, I'm curious, number one, how COVID has affected your underwriting currently. Mm-hmm. What influence you have there?
Yeah. So for a few months, we just weren't really underwriting deals because we just didn't know what to expect. We've seen our markets react, and we're halfway through this. So there's a lot more to decide, you know, and there's still a lot of unknown, but we do know more now. And so we have adjusted our underwriting to be more conservative, and it is harder for us to compete because we're already conservative, but you know, we're not doing any type of rent growth in the first 12 to 18 months, depending on how big of a lift it is. And then 1 to 1.5% in year two, and then normalizing in year 3 through 5. And we're not a group that gets any more aggressive than 3% rent growth in our market. And our market in Tucson just had 3.3% rent growth in the third quarter of 2020 during COVID. But, you know, we just are not that aggressive. We've also, you know, just taken a look at our expenses. Your expense lines during COVID are going to go up with more people staying home. Utilities have gone up, certainly, and crime has ticked up in certain areas. And so you may need more payroll to help with that kind of stuff. So, you know, it is a case by case basis, asset by asset basis. But as far as rent growth is concerned, we've definitely ticked that down, and we're assuming no growth in the first 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Are you still, you know, when you're underwriting value add projects and you're looking at rent increases, and are you still looking at projects like that where you can go in and renovate, do physical improvements and bump rents that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we love value add. It just needs to be the perfect deal. You know, it can't be something where you're setting the new market rents in that area. They've got to have comparable or below comparable rents so that you know that you can get there. But I would just be careful at how much growth you're anticipating in the first 12 months. You know, even if you are going to do a value add investment, maybe it takes a year longer to get there versus getting it flipped in 12 to 18 months. Maybe it's taken 24 to 36 months to get to that point, because, you know, essentially that is rent growth as well, right? On current condition proper units. So you do have to take a look at that. You've got to make sure, like in the Phoenix area right now, 2 years ago, two bedrooms were the hottest thing on the market. You wanted mostly two bedrooms. Now people are downsizing a little bit. Two bedrooms has the most exposure in Phoenix right now versus one bedrooms. And so one bedrooms you can't keep full. So, you know, there's that kind of stuff to kind of pay attention to and think about, because, you know, just because there's a value add play to be had and the rents are below market doesn't mean that you're going to get it as quickly as you would have 12 to 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. I mean, it's, and the truth is, like, you know, just to reiterate, it's so unprecedented what we're dealing with, and underwriting at any point in this pandemic is just a different animal than any other time that we've ever had before, because it's so undetermined how things are going to work out, who, you know, which candidate wins the election and how that affects the, you know, their policies is around COVID and around housing and around the rent moratorium. And there's just so much up in the air right now that I think all you can do is be uber conservative, or at least reasonably conservative. Now, I would add that you are investing in such a high growth market with such a massive supply and demand component going on there, such a massive demand, really, that there's just like kind of how we are here in Salt Lake City. There's an aspect of having the risk of the short term impact of COVID being somewhat mitigated just because of the demand factor and the competition from the tenant's perspective of trying to find a place to live these days is still very, very difficult. So, you know, it's such a crazy time, but you know, it's also a time. What do you feel about the opportunities here coming up? Are you guys kind of preparing to ramp up acquisitions?
We would love to. And I think, you know, when this all started, everyone was excited. Oh, there's going to be blood on the streets. You need to take advantage of it. There's going to be huge buying opportunities. Will there be some opportunities? I do think so. I think the window of opportunity is going to be extremely short. It's not going to be like a 2008. And during this whole thing, cap rates have compressed because look at the interest rates, right? So technically now you can get better cash flow than you could 6 months ago because of the interest rates. So that's why cap rates are compressing right now. So if cap rates continue to compress, then, you know, there's not really going to be any huge buying opportunities. So it's going to really be a lot dependent on what happens with COVID over the next, you know, potentially 2 years, how much longer the can's going to be kicked down the road with the eviction moratorium. I'm a believer that it will not end on December 31st. I think they're going to extend it. And the longer that gets extended, the worse it's going to get. And then maybe you will see some opportunity. So I still think we're 6 to 9 months at least from seeing some good opportunities, but it's not going to be this flood of, you know, crazy, you know, value add properties coming on the market for, you know, well below market pricing because people are in desperate need. It's just, I don't see that happening, unfortunately, you know, good and bad, but there will be a window of opportunity. It's going to be for those that are really positioned right and can or have the relationships to get to the right person. They're not going to just be handed out to people. And, you know, the markets so far have proven that they're very resilient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you guys writing LOIs right now?
Yeah, we're under contract on a property right now that's going to close in early December. We've got a few more offers out. So again, we've adjusted our underwriting to be more conservative. And these deals are deals from seeds we've planted 2 years ago. You know, so this is not like I called someone and then boom, we got a deal. I mean, these are seeds that we've been planting for a while. One's completely off market. Now we're dealing with the seller. And so those are the types of opportunities that just happen to pop up. But, you know, as far as a lot of deal flow is concerned, deal flow is kind of slowed down right now with the election coming up, the fourth quarter coming up, a lot more unknown. So I think it'll start to ramp up beginning of next year. But again, these are all deals that are going to call for offers, having best and finals times two, and, you know, going for well above market versus the other way around.
Yeah, it's amazing. There hasn't seemed to be much lightning at all on the demand side of the multifamily scene. You know, there's such a large amount of capital out there still that needs a good place to park, you know, so to speak. And with, like you mentioned, interest rates being as low as they are, cap rates just continue to compress. And Phoenix is like maybe the example of compressing cap rates, right? Mm-hmm. I was thinking of that earlier, how, you know, over the last couple of years, Phoenix has really seen a lot of cap rate compression there. So
every year I tell myself, man, we can't pay these kind of prices. And every year it surprises me that the cap rates just keep dropping. I mean, you know, 2 years ago when I first started, you were looking for a 6 cap. Right now, I looked at a deal that's being offered tomorrow. It's going to go for a 4 cap. I mean, we're not going to offer on it, but, you know, it may even go in the threes. And that's just crazy, you know? So
you can do value add in that environment, but it's really hard to cash flow in that environment.
Yeah, and it's got to be a heavy enough lift. I mean, again, the interest rates are, you know, a solid thing in that situation. But at the same time, you know, the lower the cap rate, the higher the value add has to be. Essentially, the more risk there is in a time when there's a lot of uncertainty. So you've just got to be very confident in your business plan that you're going to be able to get that lift. Because do I think that cap rates are going to continue to compress? Yes. Is that a for sure certainty? No. And so if you're going in buying at a four cap and you're hoping to exit at a four cap in a couple of years, and all of a sudden, you know, we're in a 5.5 cap environment, now you're underwater and you're in a bad situation. So, you know, there's balance there, and there's definitely risk reward on what your business plan is and how you execute it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys have an exciting future. What do you think the next 5 years look like for you?
Yeah, Gary and I are hiring an executive assistant actually this week. So it's going to be our first hire for our company, which is extremely exciting. Okay. And then we want to continue to grow our asset management summit and continue educating people on that side, because I think that there is just not enough education on what to do once you close on a property. And really, we want to be a company in 5 years that has a C-suite of executives kind of running our company, acquisitions, you know, director of operations, investor relations, all those. And so it's an exciting time for us. We're really looking forward to continuing to grow at a steady pace. And hopefully by the end of next year, we're adding our second person on.
Yeah. That's so exciting to add a team member is really great. We just got to do that twice here at our team in the last month. So we're really excited here too. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Thank you. You too.
Yeah. So you real quickly mentioned your summit. Tell us a little bit about your asset management summit. And when is that this coming one?
Yep. Our next one is April 5th through the 11th. It's only 7 days this time. We did one in October, end of September, early October. It was 14 straight days. We had over 1,800 people. It was completely free. And our goal is just to add value and awareness to asset management. It's just such an important topic for people who are getting in this space, who have never managed a business, who have never managed people, who have never implemented systems. You know, these are things that are necessary in this business that a property management company is not enough to do. So if it's whether it's hiring someone to do it for you, you know, not a property management company, but an asset manager that's focused on your portfolio, or doing it yourself, you really need to understand the ins and outs of asset management to be able to efficiently either manage someone doing it or implement those systems yourself. So really passionate about getting the word out there that, hey, asset management is a real thing in apartment investing, and you need to be a best-in-class operator is what we call it, in order to get the best NOIs for your company. I mean, if you can imagine just driving your NOI at your property by $5,000 a month, which can either be done by raising rents, adding income lines, or controlling expenses, you're adding $1 million of value in a six cap environment to your property. Yeah. So how important is asset management? It's extremely important. Now, you can add millions and millions of dollars of value in your property if you're going to manage something properly. So that's what we're very focused on, is helping people be able to drill down and get that NOI up $5,000 a month, so you can add $1 million of wealth to you in your investor's pocket.
You know, that's like I think that's a mic drop right there. Millions of dollars to to investors and your own pockets. That's a good place to leave it. Kyle, this has been great. We'll be watching your growth, and certainly we'll be at your summit in April. Tell us the dates on that one more time.
April 5th through 11th, you can go to amsummit2021.com to sign up now. Like I said, it's completely free. And so you can do that now, or you can wait. There's no cap on kind of how many people we get there, but there may be some incentives for the first couple hundred people who sign up. So
awesome. Awesome. Great. Well, listeners, if they want to reach you, Kyle, what's the best place?
Yeah, you can reach us at our website, which is aptcapitalgroup.com. On there, we've got a free passive investor's guide. It helps get you educated on things you should know before you do invest in your first deal. And you can also reach out to us on the Contact Us page there, and happy to have a conversation and schedule a call to help you any way I can.
Awesome. Awesome. Kyle, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fantastic value add hour here that we got to spend with you. I'm very grateful. I know our listeners are grateful, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Tate.
You bet. Let us know how we can ever serve you. And listeners, we will catch you on the next episode of The Apartment Guys.
Thanks for listening to The Apartment Guys with Tate Seymour. Tate and friends are grateful to have you as a loyal listener. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with friends on your Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. Also, check out Tate's YouTube channel for videos of many of these episodes and more. Until next time, take massive action steps and rock on.